Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Last week, Urban Meyer became the 24th head coach in the history of OSU football. He arrived on the scene as the Buckeye Nation awaits ruling from the NCAA on rules infractions. More changes might be coming to OSU as well. Sophomores living on campus someday, privatized parking, a response to the uptick in campus-related crime. Joining us now to talk about all of that right now, all that's in store for the Buckeyes because of all of that, is OSU President E. Gordon Gee. Welcome to the show.
Well, thanks, Ann. It's great to be here, as always. I appreciate the opportunity. And it's kind of a gloomy day out there. Let's kind of get ourselves up and running.
Let's be the scarlet to the gray.
Let's roll, huh?
Listeners, if you have a question or comment for Gordon Gee, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Let's give that screener a workout today. You can also go online to the All Sides with Ann Fisher Facebook page and leave your question or comment there. Gordon Gee, you weren't at the announcement that Urban Meyer had been hired as head football coach for the Buckeyes. Do you only show up when there's bad news with football season?
Well, you know, I show up when there's news, generally, if it's something that I should be intimately involved in. In this instance, I was actually meeting with the governor's staff. They didn't check with my schedule, and besides, I think it was appropriate that the athletic director who had made the decision and who had recommended Coach Meyer that he be there to make the announcement, and I didn't even get a chance to watch it on television until it was rather late, so I had a chance to catch the news conference after the fact.
Do you know Urban Meyer?
I, of course, have met him because of the fact that I interviewed him in order to make certain that that he knew how committed we were to our athletic program and that we wanted to hear from him what his plans were. So I have met him and had a wonderful discussion with him and with his wife, Shelley. I think they're really terrific people. I'm very happy that they have joined with us at the university.
Urban Meyer was quoted in the OSU Lantern last week, I think it was, as saying, "Our objective is simple, to make the state of Ohio proud. Our goal is to win Big Ten championships." So, given all that's happened in the last few months, several months, is the idea of what makes Ohio proud winning Big Ten championships?
You know,
or is it just about that?
Our governor was asked the other day, in fact, it was a week ago Monday, who, as you know, is an Ohio State graduate and a great supporter of the university. He was asked the other day on the date of the announcement of our football coach. They said, "What did he think about it?" He said, "Well, it was great that we have attracted an Ohioan back to be involved for our football program." He praised Coach Fickell, which we all believe has done a wonderful job, a great young man, and his wife Amy have just done a fabulous job. But then he pointed out, he said, "You know, this is not about our football program. It's about the fact that we have a world-class university." And that's what I try to remind everyone. We are not a university with a football team. We're a world-class university that happens to play football. And, of course, anything that we do, whether it be in physics, chemistry, whether it be in business, anywhere, our goal is to be the very best. And in our football program, our goal is to win the Big Ten and to be very successful with our program.
$4 million a year for 6 years is what the contract says for Urban Meyer right now. What sort of message do you think that level of compensation sends about college and universities and their sports teams?
Well, you know, of course, I'm pretty direct about that, and that is the fact that our athletic program is self-supporting. And our athletic program is not only self-supporting, but through cost shifting, it pays for a considerable number of assets that we have at the institution, and it was very instrumental in paying part of the renovation cost for our library, as a matter of fact. So we're blessed. And I believe this. I believe that people ought to be paid competitively. We pay our surgeons a great deal of money. We pay our faculty and in all aspects of the institution. We are a very competitive institution in terms of pay, and we'll be a competitive institution in terms of pay in the market where those folks are being hired. And so that he is not the highest paid football coach by far. I think he ranks, we believe that we have perhaps the finest athletic program in the country, and he ranks, I think, fourth among sitting coaches right now in terms of his pay.
You know, when you think about it, when you think about that kind of money and what it's worth and what he's worth, is there anyone at OSU, and I imagine you're not going to name names, but when you think about it, is there someone out there you think, "I wish I could pay them more money"?
Oh, there are a lot of people I wish I could pay more money. Absolutely. I mean, I wish this. I've always thought about this. I always would love to be at the top of the scale in terms of what we pay for our people. But it's not simply about pay. I mean, I want to make sure that this is a very happy place, that we support people in terms of good research facilities, in terms of good libraries, a variety of other things. You know, right now we are a truly blessed institution. There are 3,600 colleges and universities in this country, and I point out that 3,590 of those presidents would love to have our problems. We have, because of the support of our legislative leaders, our governor, we have not gone through the dramatic reallocation and cost reduction that has happened in so many places. I was pointing out the other day to a group of folks that my friends at the University of California are trying to cut $1.2 billion out of their budget right now. They've let about 20 to 30,000 people go. They're eliminating whole departments. They're closing programs. Everyone's on furlough. It's the same could be said for the University of North Carolina. The same could be said for the University of Wisconsin. The same could be said for many of the major institutions in the country. And so what we're trying to do is we're trying to put ourselves in a position that we control our own agenda, and also that we continue to remind the people of the state that we are the most important economic, social, cultural, intellectual engine for the state, and that we will create opportunities for its citizens and create jobs for all of us who live here.
Mark in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Mark.
Hey, Mark.
Hi there.
Hi.
Yeah, I have a question, I guess, as far as pay is concerned.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just wondering if you yourself and the new football coach could feasibly possibly live on, like, a fourth of what they're making. I mean, I'm thinking, you know, I can live on $1 million a year, and I don't even make, you know, I make $10 an hour if I'm mm-hmm. lucky. So I just don't understand the money. Thank you.
Well, I appreciate that, and probably the answer is that I think you live within your means, whatever those are. You know, I'm very blessed to have a great job, and I'm very well compensated. In fact, I'm the highest compensated public university president in the country, and now I've been at it a long time. I run a huge operation. I think that. I don't make any excuses for that. I believe that I earn that pay every day, and I have enormous responsibilities. I make decisions that are billion-dollar decisions almost every day, and so I would hope that I make the right decisions and am recognized for that.
You said you were meeting with the governor's staff?
Mm-hmm.
Anything special?
We were just talking about the Capitol bill and mm-hmm. Some things we're trying to do, yeah. I mean, you know, I run a university. I don't run a football program. And so the more important thing for me to do that day was meeting regarding the capital needs of the university. And so that's precisely what I did.
You know, we lately in the media and stuff been talking about this 24/7, 365 political cycle we're in, mm-hmm. it feels like, mm-hmm. and not – more than feels like we are in it, and for some reason and for many reasons. Anyways, I wonder if that translates in your job in any way. Do you feel that same sort of pressure that there's never a downtime?
Well, I have no downtime.
Well, but in terms of politics.
Oh, in terms of politics. Well, you know, the university is fortunate to, I think, have support on both sides of the aisle. Obviously, there's some issues that raise themselves to a level that do concern us, but my belief is the fact that we are very blessed in Ohio. My friend Kurt Steiner, who is a great political observer, and Herb Asher, who's one of the smartest guys politically, they both make a note that the Ohio way tends to be a much more civilized way, that we do reach across the aisle in a number of ways, and we find common cause, particularly around things like education and the arts, et cetera. So I think that we are not as prone to the vicissitudes of the power structure and the power struggle that's going on. But saying that, I think that everyone's affected by it. I frankly am very discouraged by the kind of thing that we see. I think that we lack civility in our conversations. I don't think we have depth. I think that we're controlled by the far right and the far left. I think that this kind of cycle where someone can be put on a pedestal one day and then torn down the next. I think our democracy is threatened by the vicissitudes of a public display of this kind.
Urban Meyer jumps on board as the university community awaits the fallout from the failure to monitor charge from the NCAA mm-hmm. for Ohio State on November 3rd. It was in relation to the tattoo memorabilia scandal in the football program that broke out, I don't know, mm-hmm. 10 months ago now or something like that. The charge is among the most serious allegations they can bring against a school. What are your feelings about that?
Well,
now,
I think that we have cooperated very clearly with the NCAA, and by the way, that failure to monitor was about one very small issue. It was about one donor. It was not about the tattoo.
That's right. It was about the booster, right?
And we could have argued that issue. We didn't. We believe that it's important for us to get this issue behind us. We've been great partners with the NCAA, and we've worked very hard to make certain that our case is very well known. And I'm very hopeful that we'll have a resolution of this in the next short period of time.
How much, when these things drag out this mm-hmm. long, do you feel like it's worth the dragging out process? Is it worth the thoughtfulness that you hope is going into it?
Well, I mean, I think the NCAA is doing the very best that they can do. I do not feel that they have in any way tried to drag this process out. They have a process. I think that, Mark Emmert, whom I know very well as the president of the NCAA, we're all taking a look at how we can expedite decisions and that we can be more clear and more thoughtful about NCAA decisions. But this, in terms of us, I think that they've done exactly what they needed to do in order to make certain that we I had an opportunity to inform them of all the issues, that we partnered with them. They investigated with us the issues. They have no more issues with us, and we're just waiting now for resolution.
What are you looking for in terms of what's being done to change the way the university monitors the football program and its players to avoid future scandals like this?
The thing about it is the real issue is how do we constantly take a look at our compliance? The most vulnerable areas of compliance are in medicine, and then in research, and then in athletics. In fact, athletics comes in third; it gets more visibility. But the real test for us is whether we have strong compliance systems, issues in terms of how we run our medical programs, how we run our research programs, and then athletics kind of comes in the third slot. So when we decided we needed to further review our compliance issue, it was a global review. It was about how our compliance systems work across the institution. It was not simply focused on our football program, our athletic program. And by and large, what our folks tell us is the fact that we have a very strong compliance system, but we also have areas and gaps which we need to improve, and those are the things that we're going to be doing. But I feel very confident that we have asked the right questions and we're getting the right answers.
The booster, you mentioned it was an issue with mm-hmm. a booster. To what extent do you think that people like that booster should have to that there should be some consequences for what they did, too?
Well, you know, I'm just not going to comment on those kind of things right now because I just don't – I just haven't given enough thought to how all this works. I was the president of the first reform commission of the NCAA back in 1989. Our job was to try to wrestle the NCAA away from the coaches and the athletic directors. We did that successfully after a long period of time, and so I think that there's a general reform agenda going forward with the NCAA under Mark Emmert's leadership. But as to our particular issue, I just have really no comment.
My guest is Ohio State University President E. Gordon Gee, and we welcome your questions and comments as well during this conversation. Give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. And don't forget the All Sides with Ann Fisher Facebook page. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
This is 89.7 NPR News. And remember, this Friday, December 9th at 5 p.m., WOSU Public Media will no longer broadcast on 8:20 a.m. To hear your favorite programs, tune to 89.7 NPR News, where you can listen to the BBC NewsHour, All Sides with Ann Fisher, Fresh Air, On Point, and Talk of the Nation, along with all of your favorite shows. You can also stream NPR and local news programming anytime online at WOSU.org. And be sure to set your radio dial to 89.7 FM after this Friday, December 9th. 39 degrees with cloudy skies in downtown Columbus. There is a chance of rain this morning. Clouds in the afternoon warming up to a high of 44 degrees. Clouds tonight, a low of 31. Sunshine for Wednesday, a high of 42. Partly cloudy Wednesday night and a low of 27. All Sides with Ann Fisher continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Hi, this is All Sides with Ann Fisher. My guest is...
We were just having a great conversation, weren't we?
we forgot.
We hope everyone heard us.
If you could be a fly on the wall.
Mm-hmm.
OSU President Gordon Gee is with me right now. If you have a question or comment, get them to us. Don't wait. 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. This child sex abuse scandal at Penn State University has people wondering what sports programs at other colleges and universities are doing to monitor the kind of interaction that occurs between coaching staff and children. In this case, it wasn't a sports camp student or anything like that, but a lot of that does go on, and coaches do have a certain kind of access. At Ohio State, what were your thoughts regarding that when you heard about it?
Well, about the day after this whole thing broke, we had a meeting with our senior officers. We asked the question, what are we doing? What should we be doing? What did we learn from Penn State? I think that every institution in the country needs to be asking those kinds of questions, not overreacting and certainly not underreacting and not saying, thank goodness that it's there and not here. You know, there are 65,000 students, 48,000 faculty and staff, and I'm certain that we have things going on that none of us are aware of, that we need to be more vigilant about it. And so we'll certainly focus on that over the next period of time. That's one of the things that we take very seriously.
You know, some suggest that the adulation of big-time college sports, you know, to just get away from the money part of it, but that especially football and basketball create atmospheres where people like former Penn State assistant coach Jerry Sandusky, who's accused of molesting the boys, can get away with just about anything because they're saying that Joe Paterno was, the most powerful man in the valley there.
I think that this has always been one of the issues about athletics. It gets way too much attention on the upside. It gets way too much attention on the downside. And so we need to make certain that we have a way to, as an institution, and also as a conference, and I just came from the Big Ten president's meetings in which we are talking about how do we make certain that we do not get a nexus of power which would allow folks to get outside the boundaries, because we need to monitor that very carefully, both individually and collectively, and that's one of the things we're going to be doing.
Al in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Al.
Thank you. President Gee, I'd like to ask a question unrelated to athletics.
Please do.
You
have a... great perspective of what's going on nationally, and I want to talk about national, not local.
Okay.
And you can see that the tuition has been really double the national inflation rate for about 25 years, and many students are getting out with extremely high debt. And I wondered if this isn't what your assessment of where that's going to go. And how is that going to impact the housing market, for example, in which students get out with excessive debt, can't buy that first house? What do you think about the national theme?
Oh, I think, first of all, it's interesting you'd ask that question, because I happen to be chairing a new national commission on the future of the American university, and that's our real issues about attainment and affordability. I think we all need to ask that question. I pointed out that when I was the president of Brown, I really didn't give any thought about tuition costs. I just waited for Harvard to set its tuition, and I was set at $100 less. It's the only thing I thought about. I had no thought about anything else. At Ohio State, we take great pride in the fact that we are one of the most that we're one of the most affordable institutions in the country with one of the highest quality. As you know, our tuition is not even the highest in the state of Ohio among public institutions. We look very, very carefully at that. We look at the affordability factor. One of the things that we are doing as an institution, by the way, to meet those issues is the fact that we stopped on a dime in the middle of this recession and stopped raising money for just general things and started raising money for scholarships. We've been very successful. Want to make certain that every student who was admitted to the university could afford to come to the institution. So our cost and quality issues at Ohio State are very significant in terms of our competitiveness. Now, saying that, at the national scale, I think that there are some very serious problems. I think that there may even be a tuition bubble. I think particularly about the smaller private institutions that are tuition-driven that charge enormous tuitions, and they do not have an endowment to help them over the hump in some ways. And so I believe we all need to take a look at it. Now, saying that, remember that the cost of living is made up of a number of indexes. And some are lower than the cost of living and some are much higher. The higher education price index is substantially higher than the general cost index because of the fact that universities are research-centered, are book-centered, are paper-centered, are technology-centered. And so our tuition has not risen above the HEPI index by any amount. And remember this, the cost of living index is made up of a number of different indices, and so we always need to remind ourselves of that.
Thanks a lot, Al, for your call. Take care. Jerome in Marysville, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Jerome.
Thank you. President Yi, I'm wondering if we're heading towards an economic bubble in the education industry. When you look at the massive investments in infrastructure and building, which you can see on even on OSU campus, and you look at the recruiting material sent to kids advertising not the education so much as the lifestyle, it seems to me that it's, you know, following patterns in other industries, and you've already mentioned a tuition bubble. It seems to me that, the cutting back on full-time tenured positions, the reliance on adjunct faculty, it seems to me that we're at great risk of heading into an economic bubble for the whole industry.
I think that there's some danger about that. I think you make a very powerful point and one that I think a lot about. As I say, I'm chairing a national commission in which we're asking those very questions, and I think we need to. I would also point out, though, that the differential in terms of pay over time between a college degree and a high school degree is substantial, exceeding $1 million and growing substantially according to the number and the kind of institution you attend and opportunities that do exist. So if you take a look at that that way, it's higher education is an enormous investment in our future. The second thing is this. The economy of this country is not going to be determined by its ability to produce cars or produce widgets any longer. It's going to be determined by our ability to outthink in order to be able to outperform. Thinking is my business. I'm in the world of ideas. So now universities are the central economic creative engine in this country. And so we need to invest heavily if we're going to be able to remain competitive on the global stage. And there's no doubt about it that this century, if it's going to be an American century, as the last century was, is going to now have to re-engineer itself to look very carefully at the investment strategies that we have in terms of ideas which are university-centered.
Jerome, thanks a lot for your call.
You're very welcome. Thank you.
Take care. My guest is OSU President Gordon Gee. If you have a question or comment for him, give us a call, 614-292-8513. We're halfway through our conversation. If you want to email us, you can go to allsides@wosu.org. But don't wait till the last minute. We won't be able to squeeze you in then. In a private meeting yesterday, President Obama and Secretary of Education Duncan met with about a dozen college presidents, mostly from public institutions, leaders of two nonprofit educational organizations, and about how to curb the rising cost of college and improve graduation rates. And one of the university presidents said that they discussed three core issues. One was responsibility for cost and what the federal government can do to support innovation with incentive money or something like race to the top. What do you think about that, Gordon Gee?
Well, you know, that's, again, I've said this now the third time. That's precisely the reason we created this commission. Actually, I would have had an opportunity to go there, but I doing other things, running a university on the side here.
So that's one of the questions the commission's looking at?
Exactly. I mean, mm-hmm. What we're taking a look at is how do we maintain the quality of our institutions, and how do we take a look at it in terms of creativity and affordability? And so those are the issues we have to ask. Remember, my core issue, though, is I believe that universities are now the center of our world in terms of our social, cultural, economic vitality, and so we need to continue to figure out how we make those investments, so we make it within the context of an economy and a new reality in our economy that is substantially different than it was 50 years ago.
Another of the core issues they mentioned was the increasing accountability in student aid.
Mm-hmm.
What does that mean? They didn't really explain it. What do they mean by accountability?
Well, I think that making certain that we are giving dollars in the right way with the right formulas, with the right context, I think that that's what they're trying to talk about. You know, sometimes the way that student aid is given out doesn't make a lot of sense to people. We need to make certain that we have it calibrated so that the dollars are going to the right people.
Are you comfortable with the way money is loaned to students for tuition and that sort of thing too?
Well, yeah, I think generally that we have a good system, and I know that our own system here is very, very good, very responsible, and certainly our leadership does an excellent job. But I cannot say that for all institutions. I think that the for-profit institutions in many ways are taking advantage of this rather than using it as an opportunity to affect people's lives in the right way.
There was also a conversation about what a degree means. Mm-hmm. What does it mean? And lifelong education, and what does that mean? And to what extent higher education is accessible to people throughout life instead of...
Well, you know, again, I've said on this program the fact that I believe that one of the mistakes we make is that we think about higher education as being discrete. We need to think about the world of education as being K through life, that we need to have a continuing sense of improving the quality of our lives through education, through reading, through research, through the things that make a difference and who add to the intellectual vigor and the idea generation. And so this notion that you come away 4 years, join a fraternity, sorority, sing Kumbaya, and go home and then get a real job, those days are gone. And so, yes, education is a continuum, and we need to make certain we have great partnerships in that continuum with our community college friends, with our four-year college friends, with our small liberal arts college friends, with our friends in public education. Those are the kinds of things that I think will powerfully make a difference in terms of the educational quality in this country.
I was listening to a story on NPR the other day about how some colleges are trying to do different things in terms of exactly how they educate and maybe bringing more of the education process into the dormitories, for instance, and instead of making it so the dorms so separate from the rest of the university life and the academic part of it, things like that.
I think that what we have to do is we have to totally rethink the way that we deliver the educational component of the university. We have to think about it precisely that way. I believe very strongly in a collegiate system. That's one of the reasons, for example, that we're moving to bring sophomores back onto campus, because it's not about them living, it's about them living and learning and creating an environment in which learning is a very, very important component of that 168 hours that they spend with me on campus.
A lot of people are concerned about the sophomores on campus because they say they can barely afford college as it is, and that'll add an additional cost onto it that they won't be able to
I think that the university has a responsibility to do what it's always done, it does, which is to try to make those issues affordable. And I think that what you have to do is you have to think about the fact that college is the one chance you have as an opportunity to really learn and to think and to grow grow. And if it's just simply about getting a degree, we're not a technical hochschule. What we are is we're a university. And ideas need to flourish. And they're not going to flourish if you're in some shotgun place out in some suburb somewhere. That is just not the way that education at a great university should take place.
Hello, Mr. T?
Yes, ma'am.
From Worthington?
Mm-hmm.
Welcome to the show.
Hi, I got a question, sort of a comment. Back in my day in 1922, I'm not that old, in the 50s, they had sign on and sign off of the television radio stations. WSU AM was going to leave the AM. Some people don't know why, but when you do your close on the AM side, that you send a message saying that as of such 5 o'clock like you do now,
mm-hmm.
but then you run the Star Spangled Banner for like 2 minutes, and then 2 minutes with the Common Ohio as a close.
You mean
sign off of the station like they did in 1922.
You mean when 820 goes off the air?
Right, they do a sign off like they did back in 1922.
When it goes off the air forever on Friday, you mean?
Right,
yeah,
right.
Okay.
Some people don't understand and know why. And could you please say
well,
about
is I mean, we have OSU President Gordon Gee on the horn right now. And so, Mr. T, next time we have an open forum, we'll talk about it. But I have talked about it several times before that it was part of the deal. Actually, Gordon Gee probably knows about this. It's part of the deal that that when we bought 89.7, I say we, ha-ha, 101, I'm sorry, we bought 101 and 101 and put classical 101 over there. And part of the deal was that we would sell 820 to pay the debt. So that's why.
Yeah, I mean, FM makes more sense for a public radio station. With the fact that we had many people who were very concerned about the fact that we'd given up our classical station. So therefore, we met those needs by selling one in order to be able to buy the other and be able to meet those kind of requirements that really only public radio can meet for the general public.
So thanks a lot for listening, Mr. T, and we'll look for you after Friday as well. Take care. We're going to take a little bit of a break now. My guest is Gordon Gee, the president of Ohio State University. We have a bunch of emails to get to and more calls to take. So if you want to give us a call, 614-292-8513. You can email us at allsides@wosu.org. And I don't see any Facebook messages yet, but if you want to, you can go to the All Sides with Ann Fisher Facebook page. So stay with us. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
Many people get very little in their mailbox other than coupons and pizza ads. The post office now warns your mail may arrive later, eventually maybe not at all on Saturdays, and many post offices may close altogether. I'm Neil Conan. Has the post office outlived its usefulness? Join us next Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
And Talk of the Nation is this afternoon from 2 until 4 on 89.7 NPR News. 39 degrees in downtown Columbus, cloudy skies. There is a chance of rain today, just a slight chance, and a high of 44. Mostly cloudy tonight, a low of 31 degrees. Sunshine for Wednesday and a high of 42. Partly cloudy Wednesday night, a low of 27.
Support for 89.7 comes from Columbus College of Art and Design, where the spring semester of Saturday morning art classes for children and youth begins February 4th. Information and online registration are available at www.ccad.edu.
Stay right here on All Sides with Ann Fisher. In 20 minutes at 11 o'clock, Tech Tuesday begins, and a discussion of technology for the disabled, also tracking software on smartphones, and the latest in antivirus software. Join us for Tech Tuesday from 11 till noon on 89.7 NPR News. And be sure to visit WOSU.org/allsides for the latest updates from All Sides with Ann Fisher. On our show's website, you can listen and watch the show live, weekdays from 10 until noon. That's WOSU.org/allsides. And All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Welcome back. My guest is OSU President Gordon Gee. If you have a question or comment, once again, 614-292-8513. An email from Ed. He writes, as you're on the radio today, it seems appropriate to ask this. OSU holds handfuls of TV and radio licenses, mostly for rebroadcast of the core ones across the state. Yet the students still get the short end of the stick with the lack of a true college radio spectrum, a college radio station. What can you do to fix this and achieve eminence in this area?
Well, you know, I don't know if we own licenses. That's the first time I've heard about that. And I would just say very clearly that I think that we have opportunities for students to do collegiate radio. They do. I've been on the radio. I've been on the television. But remember this. This is our station. WOSU belongs to the university. We take great pride in it. It's one of the great radio stations and one of the great television stations in this country. And students have an opportunity to come over here and do internships and a variety of other things, learn at the feet of some of the best professionals in the country. So I feel very confident that we're meeting the needs of our students in terms of the university's obligation to broadcast in this arena.
And an email from Abe. Everything at OSU seems to be about money now. Everything is for sale, from the naming rights plastered all over Ohio Stadium to even the parking garages around campus. There are even ads on the baskets at Value City Arena, and you're now supporting charter universities and privatizing university functions. And this is all going on while the university raises tuition, raises admission requirements, continues to accept money from a bankrupt state government. So my question is this. Will there ever come a day when Ohio State decides that it has enough money? Will the university ever lower tuition and take less money from taxpayers?
First of all, 10% of our money comes from taxpayers. Our university is basically a private institution based upon that formula. Many private institutions receive more money from the state than does your state university. Secondly of all, what we're trying to do is we're trying to make certain that we meet the obligations of the people of the state by taking a look at every asset that we have and every opportunity we have to create value for the university so that we can meet the core values of the university, which are teaching and research and idea generation, and our obligations to our faculty, staff, and students, and to 11 million Ohioans. I believe that in so doing that we'll be able to not only survive, but we'll be able to thrive as an institution over the next period of time. And remember this, that our tuition costs are among the lowest in the nation. So we are not an institution that has been very greedy in that regard.
Regarding core operations, you've said that you're not convinced that parking is central to the academic life of the university, but that a parking space represents a lot of scholarships, a lot of opportunities. How will the proposed parking lease be translated into opportunity for the average student at OSU? Is that something they'll actually notice?
The answer is yes. I mean, if we do this, the only reason to do it would be if we were able to gain a substantial ability to be able to monetize and use it for scholarships, use it for faculty support, use it for support of our infrastructure. That would be the reason to do it. If we can't use it to leap the university forward, then we won't do it. But the very fact that people think we shouldn't ask the question is not the nature of the university. University should ask questions about everything.
So the university is just asking questions now? It's not guaranteed?
There's no commitment to doing this. There is a commitment to ask the question. The same way I'm committed to asking questions about golf courses and airports and about land that we hold throughout the state, I'm going to ask questions about everything because that is my responsibility. My responsibility is to make certain that the core values of the university are sustained, that our faculty are able to teach in good facilities, that we're able to pay the very best people doing the very best things, that we're able to provide scholarships for students, and we're able to create ideas. If it doesn't do that, if it doesn't is not central to that, then we need to ask questions about it.
Cliff from Westerville, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Cliff.
Yes, thank you. Dr. Gee, my question centers around, as we're all very painfully well aware, the economy and the job market has changed dramatically in the last few years. And I guess my question centers around what steps is Ohio State taking to make sure that incoming students and their parents fully have the latest information about starting salaries and job opportunities before they're making these commitments, oftentimes with students taking on many, many thousands of dollars of loans with the expectation of getting jobs, last year I looked at, for example, accounting, which is my field, talking about starting salaries in the $40,000 to $50,000 range, and quite frankly, that's just not even close to being true. So what steps is Ohio State taking to make absolutely sure that these incoming students and their parents are fully aware with the latest information?
Well, I would say thank you, and I think that's a great question. I'll say two things. One is the fact that we certainly work very hard to make certain that people have information as to what the university's ability is to produce, to be engaged in creating opportunities for our students. We do very, very well in that regard. If you've noticed, the Wall Street Journal just noted that we're one of the top places in the country where recruiters come. We are ranked in the top 10 in terms of production, producing people who go on into leadership in business and industry. So the educational experience of an Ohio State student is substantial. Secondly of all, in terms of making certain that our students have jobs, we are working very hard on our career services, opening up abilities to be able for people to come here and interview, which they do in substantial numbers. Our numbers are very strong in terms of students, and we provide that, about how many students have jobs after 4 years, after 5 years, after 6 years of graduation and jobs in their areas, and we have all of that data available. But the point that I'm trying to make is the fact that we have that data available, but Ohio State has a powerful story to tell, even in this recession, about how successful we have been in creating opportunities. On the other hand, we are also one of the major creator of jobs in the state, and so we continue to play that role too.
I'm sorry to jump in here, but I'm the father of three Ohio State students, one that graduated, and I kept asking those very questions time and time again, and my kids came back after talking with guidance counselors, basically saying that information was not available.
Well, we keep general we certainly keep very good information on employment data from our students, so that is available, and I know you can go to our offices, our career services offices, and they'll provide that information for you. And the university has that data on a general basis. I see it all the time.
Okay, Cliff, thanks a lot for the call. We have some emails. Bob, he says, you briefly mentioned having sophomores live on campus. If it's to happen, what does President Gee think will happen to all the empty houses that would be left behind in university area neighborhoods?
Well, I think that they will be filled because of the fact that then juniors and seniors, all the data is very clear, and that is the fact that if you have freshmen and sophomores live onto campus, then juniors and seniors stay much more close. In fact, if anything, it'll create a more consistent housing opportunity. And furthermore, the university is very committed to creating better housing off the campus, too. It's not simply about creating housing on campus, but it's about creating housing off campus. I think the only people who have to fear are those who have gouged our students for years. And if you're one of those, then be fearful, because we will create quality housing both on and off campus. Those of our great landlords who do a great job of providing high-quality housing for our students, they have not only nothing to fear, but they'll gain from this process.
Email from Paul. He says, in line with your K through life philosophy, what learning resources are available for retirees and low-income people at OSU, and how can we get more information on that?
You can go online. We have our Project 60. We have a number of things available. Retirees have many have opportunities to come and take courses at the institution. So you need to go online and take a look, and there are programs that are available to folks who otherwise would not have access to the university.
Pat calling from Canal Winchester about another group of students. Welcome to the show, Pat.
Thank you very much.
Hey, Pat, how are you?
Fine, Dr. Gee.
Good.
My question concerns our returning men and women from the military.
Mm-hmm.
What have you or the university, what have you guys done to maybe expand beyond what is required of you to assist these young men and women into acclimating successfully back into the university life?
Yeah. You know, that's a great question, and actually we have done a great deal. We have very special programs for our returning veterans. I have actually met recently with a group of our veterans who are very very laudatory of what the university has done. We have very specific programs. We have very specific activities. We have very specific onboarding activities and very specific office activities that really do focus on our returning military. And now, which is good. Now, also Ohio State is a place that has always been very consistent in terms of its support of the military. As you know, we have some of the most highly rated ROTC programs in the country. So the military presence on the campus in terms of educational opportunities are really quite high.
Pat, thanks for that call. We have done shows on that too, Pat, and I know that there's a big seminar or some kind of something coming up this spring to address that specific issue at Ohio State as well, Pat.
Thank you very much.
You bet. 614-292-8513. We just have a few minutes left. I did want to get into the campus crime issue. One of the plans, there was an uptick in crime. We all read about it in the papers. But one of the plans is to expand jurisdiction of university police or a potential proposal.
Well, we're taking a look at a number of issues. You know, I mean, we just need to make certain that we're doing well what we're doing now and then adding some of the doing some of the things we already talked about, making certain we have our night watch programs. You know, the thing about this, which is interesting, is I walk the campus probably more than anyone late at night. You know, I'm out either Friday night or Saturday night, go out about 11 o'clock and spend a lot of time. And so I do have more than just a reader field for this, and we have done a lot. We're going to continue to do a great deal working with the city, and we're very committed to making certain that our crime issues off the campus are well in tow. Now, saying that, we live in an urban setting, and we need to remind our students part of it is an educational issue. You just need to be careful in any time of an urban setting. One of the things I remind people, when I came in 1990, we had horrible crime problems. And as you know, the university has been very, very diligent in working with the city through our campus partners programs, and that the status of off-campus living and opportunities and crime and a variety of other things is in a much better place than it was 10 or 15 years ago.
As far as having campus police patrol the university district, would you talk about having OSU police begin carrying weapons, you know, guns like...
Our police do carry weapons.
They carry stun guns, isn't it?
You're asking a question. I believe that our police do carry weapons.
Okay.
They have the authority to carry weapons.
Okay.
And the answer is that if it makes sense for us to... coordinate with the city police to do that, I'd love to be able to do that. You know, I just have to say this, mm-hmm. because I love our police. We have being university officers requires a very special kind of person. They have to be mother and father and friend and a variety of other things. And so we have an extraordinary police department, which I'm very proud of.
Speaking of weapons, mm-hmm. There's a movement afoot to permit concealed weapons on campus in the wake of this recent uptick in violence.
Well, I think that
what
that's
are your thoughts
a movement
about
across,
that?
Oh, I'm totally opposed. Absolutely. I would be horrified if I thought that people were willy-nilly carrying guns on our campus. That turns us into an armed camp, not into a university. And I think that is a movement that I hope dies a warning.
An email from Cindy. The question is Ohio State going to start offering more online classes to be more flexible?
Well, we have been offering online classes, and yes, we're taking a constant look at that. But, you know, we are an institution that has a significant commitment to a high-quality education within the realms of the institution and then providing access to the university through our regional campuses, through our smaller campuses, and then through online. But we're not going to become an online university.
An email from Robert. WOSU Radio and Television often has programs that deal with newly evolving and very complex technical, environmental, and economic, and the economic issue of fracking. Personally, I think that fracking has not received the input from knowledgeable faculty at OSU that it needs and deserves. What are Dr. Gee's comments on this issue? Should we slow down and do more research on fracking before moving forward in Ohio? And, of course, Robert's talking about that method of getting the natural gas from the Marcellus Shale in Ohio.
Well, I think we have great opportunity with shale. We also have very, very bright, able people. And our dean of engineering is and our head of our environmental policy program, Ron Sega, they're all taking a look to be very much involved in partnering with the state to make certain we do it right. Beyond that, you know, I'm a lawyer. You've stretched my technical skills about as far as you can. But the answer is that the university is very much engaged in looking at this issue and very much involved in partnering with the state.
Carol, you're our last call. We're running out of time, but I wanted to squeeze you in. Welcome to the show, Carol.
Thank you very much. I'm good, thanks. My concern is about requiring undergraduates, freshmen and sophomores, to live on campus, and it's because of personal experience. I have 3 degrees from Ohio State, mm-hmm. all of which I accomplished by working and living at home. Mm-hmm. Now, granted, that hasn't been within the last 10 years, but I could not have done it had I been required to live on campus. And I just wondered if there was going to be any exceptions made.
Well, I think that with everything, this is not an absolute rule. But the answer is that generally we will have very few exceptions, and people can make their case for their exception. The data is very clear, Carol, and that is the fact that those who live on campus and those who are involved in campus life are happier, that they graduate faster, they get better jobs. I mean, the data is so overwhelmingly powerful that there is really it's too bad that we haven't been aggressively pursuing this earlier, because of some of the questions we've been asked earlier about, you know, what's the quality of education, what are the things that are happening, how are we going to get jobs. All of these data are very powerful in terms of supporting that a collegiate experience is a much better experience for someone for lifelong learning and ability to be able to forge forward. Doesn't mean to say that those who live off campus or those who live at home don't have a good experience. It is a much better experience, generally speaking, qualitatively.
Thanks, Carol, for that call. And wow, 3 degrees. Congratulations for that.
Yeah, I know. That's terrific, isn't it?
You know, when I was reading about all of the renovations to the dormitories, I was surprised at how many comments, when I was reading in the Lantern, how many comments from students complaining about it and how disruptive it is. And I was wondering, to what extent do you prepare students for the amount of construction that's going on campus? Because it sounds like they aren't ready for it.
The thing about it is it's moment for them, you know. Mm-hmm. 3 years down the line, all of those who are going to be living there are going to be living in very important new living learning facilities. And so we just have to try to alert people. We have to develop the best ways for them to be able to deal with it, and we have to deal with it with them. But we certainly are, and I visit the residence halls all the time, and their students seem to be happy the fact that we're doing the right thing.
Gordon Gee, thanks for joining us today. Appreciate it.
You're welcome. Wonderful to see you. Happy holidays to you.
Happy holidays to you. That's Ohio State University President Gordon Gee. Thanks for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News, a service of WOSU Public Media.
The new film J. Edgar, directed by Clint Eastwood, portrays former FBI Director J. Edgar Hoover as a man who had to keep his sexual orientation a secret, but collected other people's secrets to use against them. On the next Fresh Air, we talk with the screenwriter Dustin Lance Black. He also wrote the screenplay for Milk about gay activist Harvey Milk. Join us.
And Fresh Air begins later today at noon on 89.7 NPR News. This is WOSU 89.7, WOSU HD1, and WOSU 820 Columbus. And streaming online at WOSU.org. 89.7 NPR News, a service of WOSU Public Media.
Support for 89.7 comes from Marburn Academy, hosting a community parent seminar, How to Get High School to Work for ADHD Students, Tuesday, December 13th at 7 p.m. More at marburnacademy.org.
Join us for All Sides with Ann Fisher tomorrow morning at 10 for a discussion of the global pandemic of obesity. And also, NPR President and CEO Gary Nell will join the show, along with the new NPR Ombudsman. That's All Sides with Ann Fisher from 10 until noon tomorrow on 89.7 NPR News. There's a slight chance of rain this morning, clouds in the afternoon, a high of 44 degrees. And good morning, it's 11 o'clock.
smartphone apps to help us find the way and help others find us. Today on Tech Tuesday, a Central Ohio company develops a new smartphone app to help people with memory loss and developmental disabilities live more independent lives. Then, are we being tracked on our smartphones? And what do we need to know about antivirus software? That's all coming up after the news on All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News and streaming at WOSU.org/allsides.